You are listening to Dishin' and Swishin', the world of women's hoops on hoopfeed.com.
Okay, we're talking WNBA playoffs on Dishin' and Swishin' this week, and it is my pleasure as we move on to the final two first-round series to bring in two new participants. The guru Mel Greenberg joins us, and one of my favorite new people that we added this year to our roundtables, Cindy Brunson from Fox Sports in Arizona, joins us. Guys, how you doing today?
Really good, thanks. Thanks for having us.
Always a pleasure. We're going to start in the East, and this is a very interesting series to me. You know, Atlanta and Washington, 2-3, could have easily have been any of these teams dropping down to play against Chicago because their records were all so close. But in the end, you know, the way that the everything bounced, we end up with Atlanta as the 2, Washington the 3, and Indiana the 4. You know, now, Mel, you've seen a lot of these teams up close, and one thing that we talked about earlier was the idea that Indiana was probably the second-best team in the East by the end of the year, yet they end up withdrawing Chicago. So, you know, out of these two teams, Atlanta and Washington, having seen them both, who would you say is actually should be the favorite in this series?
Well, it's really crazy. You look at their series, it's a kind of mystery toss-up. First of all, I've been jokingly saying, you were there, Sunday, David. Just tell me, did Indiana tank because they thought they'd get a better matchup with Chicago, given their, you know, given their history, even with Elena now, of being able to dominate Chicago? So,
Lynn said the injuries to Catchings and January were the kind that could have become big injuries had they played. So take that for what it's worth.
Yeah, I'll buy it for the moment, you know. So you got to get past the other three to get to the finals if you're Chicago anyhow. So you might as well just chop on it, you know. Be happier at the party you start. You know, Chicago and Atlanta. I mean, Washington, Atlanta, which I'll write in the morning. You know, it's kind of funny. Washington has now made it back to the playoffs for the first time in 3 years. And when we last that Mystics team, they were on their way to greatness, got the party spoiled when Atlanta was the 4th seed, you know, and got knocked out. But, of course, it's a whole new cast of characters for the most part on Washington. The other thing that just hit me the other day, it's kind of history, you know, you look at Atlanta and you look at the one loss, they struggled coming down this stretch, of course, they're without Sancho Little, but you know, that year, they struggled too. And I think the last couple, they've never been the number one seed in the East in their current, you know, playoff string. And, you know, two of the last 3 years, the two previous, they won. And then last year, I guess there was one game that was close, and Indiana got them, which then put them in position to get Connecticut last year, which then, when you think about it, put Mike Thibault in position to get Jennison to get hired by Washington, and now he's got to get past Atlanta. So Washington is playing maybe a little more consistent down the stretch. You know, you might remember like 2.5 weeks ago when everything was so close that I had fun and picked every East team, every game involving an East team the rest of the way, and I was kind of close to what the teams would do, but I was off in terms of the games they would win. And, you know, Washington beat Atlanta twice, so that was big. And, you know, then they won at Indy. And, of course, the big thing that really helped Washington get into this dance was 7-5 against the West. And they had to play the West early. And so that was a great bank account for them because these teams don't really do great on the crossover. Chicago, I think, was the only other team that had any, you know, had a winning record against the West group. So,
Cindy, as a person that covers a lot of baseball,
you're
used to teams going on win streaks, batters getting hot, and whatever. Atlanta this year twice lost or won one game in a row. They went 6-0. Lost one, went 6-0, went 0-4, won one, went 0-4, 3-0, 0-4, 3-0, 0-4. I don't think I've ever seen a team that their whole season was a giant collection of streaks like that.
Very streaky indeed, and I was surprised to see that their vaunted ability to win at home even faltered down the stretch as the Mercury were able to go in there and get a victory. I even wasn't expecting that. So it'll be very interesting to see how the Dream perform in the playoffs, because many of us at the beginning of the season didn't have Atlanta making the postseason, period.
Yeah, and it was interesting. Yet then you went and saw them when they were playing extremely well on one of those 6-0 streaks, and at that point, they were playing like the best team in basketball.
It was Armenti Harrington and Angel McCautry leading the way, creating so many turnovers on the defensive end of the floor and getting steals that nobody in their right mind should get. It was unbelievable, the cherry picking that I saw going on in that game, and so fun to watch. And they just seemed like world beaters, but then they came back down to earth. So I'm very curious to see how they fare against a very fired-up Washington Mystics.
Now, Mel, talking about Washington for a minute and looking at the team, you know, experience is a factor we talked about early on in discussing the first series, because, you know, we have a series there where Indiana has 224 playoff games combined to Chicago's 52, and 47 of those belong to Swin. So, now here we're looking at Washington, and that's a team that only has 54 games on their entire roster in the playoffs and no championship rings. So, you know, Atlanta has been there, been to the finals, but we, you know, with players like McCautry and DeSouza. You know, how big is the experience factor going to be for Washington?
Well, if you want to count the entire roster, depending on how you look at rosters, when we look at WNBA school websites, Chris, and some of them, the coach is part of the roster, others are separate. If you want to put Tio as part of the Tio, Mike Tebow as part of the roster, here's your experience factor.
Yeah.
I mean, you've only missed a couple playoffs in there. And, you know,
Mel, let's not do that because I can't do that with the Mercury, because Russ Pennell is new to the party. So let's leave Tebow out of it.
By the way, I enjoyed Russ briefly, you know, seeing him when he came out post game on the recent New York visit. You know, he's kind of funny right off the bat. He looked at us and said, "Oh, it's just a tough New York media." You know, most of them are really web people, but you know, because the regular media, you know, we just had an announcement for the last 3 years of crossing the Hudson River to go over to Jersey and. It's great for me because it certainly cheapened my travel bill a little bit, you know. So,
actually, you brought up a good point just there that I'd like to bring up, is when you talk about one of the biggest, perhaps the biggest matchup in this series could be Mike Tebow versus Fred Williams.
That's the point. That's the point I was going to get to. I mean, no knock on Fred. I knew Fred way back when he was an assistant at Governor Cal before you guys were born, you know, in the Cheryl Miller era. So I've known a long, long, long time. But you know, see, Mike, like the last two games, Mike had actually figured out just how to limit the turnovers that Cindy just talked about, you know, with them. And that was big. And this team is, you know what, it's just like I said. There are times, in fact, it gets confusing. There are times when I'm going down there, and I almost feel I'm in the Sun karma. You know how the players love Mike. He got, you know, he got to Washington, and you hear the same kind of things you heard from Tina Charles. And this is no knock on Ann Donovan, who's a great person, great coach, and it's just kind of sad, you know, what befell her this year. But just talking about Mike, you know, you listen to Ivy Latta, who is, you know, and times in our history, dating the UNC, could even be described as a loose cannon. I don't mean that in a total negative, but, you know, as free-spirited as she is, you know. And she's been a real wild card in the added, you know, and besides being a great go-to coach for us, I've kind of joked, you know, off of what happened before Mike got hired, you know, saying that, you know, for Washington, when paying the lotto pick, but then Mike came along and cleaned up in the Atlanta pick, you know.
That's true.
Signing her as a free agent. And, you know, and then getting Kia Vaughn. And Kia Vaughn is like extra happy because a lot of people who would know history, Marion Stanley, former Macanata star and former everything in LA, you know, got retained as an assistant. One, the players wanted her, still wanted her around. Maybe if she wasn't on the previous staff, she might have gotten a job before things started happening with Mike. But she's a great post coach, and he is greatest year at Rutgers. And even though she ended up first round off her senior year, because when Mary Ann was the assistant coach there, working with Post, and they went to the Final Four and went to the title game. And I kind of asked her about that, asked Kia, you know, on a recent trip down there, and I mentioned Mary Ann, and her face just lit up. So there's a sort of chemistry building, and for all the poor Washingtons that we kept saying after the draft, you know, the way it went down, kind of funny you on the phone, Cindy, since you're on the other side of that discussion from the past, but is that Taylor Hill is starting to deliver value as the number four pick, you know, out of Ohio State. Maybe the teachings of the former WNBA star Debbie Black, you know, as the assistant at Ohio State working in the guards is paying off. But she's come up big the last couple games. And Mike, the other night, you know, had mentioned how on Friday night, how you're starting to see the maturation of Taylor Hill. So, a lot of pieces. And then you still got Crystal Langhorne, you know, who's been the consistent one. And time to time, you know, Michelle Snow, if you want to count her Tennessee history, she's certainly, you know, big game experience. So, and, you know, those two wins in Atlanta, I'm sure they had a lot of confidence factor going into this. I mean, if they, that game one will be big. If they steal game one, it'll really be something this weekend on Saturday down in Washington.
You know, one of the things that I liked about the job that Mike did this year was there were times during the season I would look at the players that were on the court, and I thought that this team wasn't going to make the playoffs because, you know, I'm not a tremendous fan of Matias Jovan as a 30-minute-a-game player, and the same thing for Michelle Snow at this point in her career. But as you look at the evolution of who he's played, you know, you brought up one thing I wanted to mention. Taylor Hill, 11 points per game over the last seven, and Ajavan has only played 20 minutes in those games as Hill has gotten the minutes. You know, Vaughn is getting the bulk of the minutes now, and Snow has taken more of a backseat, and Miesemann has come in and been, you know, a revelation off the bench. So Mike has evolved this team, and I think has really done a nice job getting it into a good position. But, Cindy, what I want to ask you is, there's always that superstar factor when you deal with another team. You know, Phoenix is going to be taking Diana into the playoffs. L.A. is going to be having Candace. But Angel could be the player that may be the most dominant when this is all done.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, look at her. She's going to be a two-time scoring champion here, and she has really shouldered the responsibility and has garnered, I think, the leadership qualities that are needed now that she picked up with the Olympic team over in London and is ready to really put this dream team on the map. She is so fun to watch this season. She's just free. She's loose. She gets it. She understands that she can be great and make others around her better. And I don't think she appreciated she had that ability until she played with the Olympic team.
And I've got to give the credit where it's due because we had the discussion about who was about how Keisha Soigne was going to have to play point guard for this team in our preseason preview
right
before she was released. And amazing job by Alex Bentley and Jasmine Thomas this year. They have combined to be one of the best 1-2 point guard combinations in the Eastern Conference.
Bentley's ability to hit the three has been mind-blowing. She's just been so clutch and so confident with it. That was totally unexpected. And, yeah, when you saw the departure of Harding and the huge hole to fill there, it was like, wow, they've got a lot of work to do. I don't see them making the playoffs. And they have just proved me completely wrong and been so fun to watch along the way.
So to bring this home, Cindy, prediction for this series?
I have to give the edge to the team that can score the most points. And in my mind's eye, that's Atlanta. I think Washington is going to make it a heck of a series. I think it'll go three games. But I like Angel's leadership. And at the end of the day, I like the Dream to advance to the Eastern Conference Finals.
Now, what's your thoughts?
Yeah, I'll give Atlanta the edge, although Atlanta's been the biggest baffle down the stretch, because when I talked about my picks, Atlanta is close to the record I thought they might have, except that they've gotten it in the weirdest way. Like, I've had the record right and the game's wrong that they played. Thought they would lose to Minnesota, they beat Minnesota. Thought they would lose to L.A., they beat L.A. Then you figure they beat Washington and keep going, Washington beat them the last two. So, maybe being the hunter in Washington's case would help. If Washington steals game one, it might be a sweep. But other than that, I'd have to, for the reasons, also Tiffany Hayes, who may end up getting, she's certainly in the hunt for sixth player of the year. I guess it really helped Angel being coached by Gino. Maybe that's what turned things around. She went from the Dream Team back to her Dream Team, so to speak.
I see what you did there, but
I'm gonna have to agree with you guys both too on this one, only because, the two things that jump out at me. One is, I always believe you got to walk before you can run, and I'm just not sure that Washington is there yet. And the other thing is, I saw the loss in Connecticut that Atlanta had, and what happened was there was just way too much overpassing. They committed 20-something turnovers, and Angel was throwing the ball too many passes. Thomas, the same thing. I think come playoff time, the team tightens it up. They realize that Angel starts becoming a little more of the old Angel in a good way, and a little less distributor, a little more shooter. And I think Atlanta's going to end up taking this. I wouldn't be surprised if it's in two, because at home, Atlanta is dominant at home, 13-4. Even though they did give a couple back, Washington is only 10-7 at home this year. So I wouldn't be surprised to see Atlanta go in and take a second game there too. So now let's go to Cindy's neck of the woods and let's go out west. And we've got what should be one heck of a series between L.A. and Phoenix. Now, this is where everybody predicted they should finish, but nobody certainly predicted that Phoenix would take the road that they took to get there. It's been a strange season, Cindy.
Absolutely. That 0-3 start, and everybody was ready to hit the panic button, and then everybody kind of looked at the injuries, first to Griner, and of course, Penny Taylor. And then all of a sudden, Amber Cox, president, COO, and general manager now too, 21 games in, went, you know what, I promised this fan base a trip to the playoffs, and so help me, I'm going to do whatever I can to get us there. And she went and plucked Russ Pennell out of the Arizona desert and said, lead this team. And he brought Anthony Boone with him as an assistant for the bigs. And the two of them, combined with Julie Hargrove, have absolutely reinvented the wheel with this Phoenix Mercury team. The Mercury went from a run-and-gun, three-point shooting, no defensive playing team to a fundamentally strong, holding the opposition to less than 40% shooting, rebounding's critical, turnovers, cutting them down, critical. It's a completely different watch. The main constant has been the elite play of Diana Taurasi, all world, all MVP, all of the time. Otherwise, if you haven't seen the Mercury play in a while, you might not recognize them.
Well, it's certainly a matchup that should be fun. Now, there were some health issues, but you said that everybody seemed to be playing well in practice today. So
yeah,
that should not be a factor.
It should be a factor. It might limit Penny Taylor only because her conditioning is still not up to snuff. Physically, she can play. The knees are not a problem. It's just her wind at this juncture, and she'll go as long as she can, and the training staff and Coach Pennell are acutely aware of her situation, and they're not going to push her by any stretch of the imagination. But I think for the Mercury to advance past the Sparks, Penny has to contribute. She has to contribute along the lines that she did against the New York Liberty, and it has to be that kind of effort. They need those points because when you look at the rosters, the Sparks can bring more offensive firepower to the table, and if the defense isn't where it's supposed to be for the Mercury, the Sparks can run them out of the gym.
You know, Mel, Carol Ross teams coming into L.A., she's the defensive whiz, okay? Her teams have always played great defense in Atlanta and Mississippi. You know, and this team seems really, really inconsistent defensively, and she seems to struggle in particular with the backcourt this year in getting them to play defense on a regular basis. You know, is that something that L.A. can suddenly turn on in the playoffs to make a difference against a high-scoring Phoenix team, or is that going to be a problem for them?
Well, you know, should we see that matchup? Obviously, I haven't, and it could be. I mean, you know what? They're like the Atlanta of the West. You know, which LA team's going to show up on a given night? And I was going to go off question topic just a short bit and talking about Penny Taylor. It's kind of funny. I always considered Penny as sort of the glue in that whole entire operation over the years. It just seemed that when Penny Taylor's hurt, things kind of either fall a little bit apart or a lot apart. I mean, to the point that 2 years ago, the NCAA Final Four, we're about to, the U.S. Basketball Writers do our awards thing that I have to emcee, and, you know, we had named the Player of the Year after Ann Myers, you know, who's with Phoenix. And we had just a half hour before had gotten the word on Penny Taylor's season-ending injury in the offseason. And, you know, that's going into the year that leads to the Griner draft. And we're going to give Griner the award. And I, right then and there, I said, hey, you might as well get to know her, because you may have to know her a lot. So I thought when Penny would be missing last year, they would struggle. I mean, I thought it would be kind of like some of these teams in the East this year, in-out, in terms of how they played. And, of course, they were way out all the way, so it was different. So, but it just seemed that maybe Cindy agrees that when Penny Taylor is there and on, as great as Diana is, you know, and we haven't even talked about my former college local star, Candace Dupree, who bought a lot to Phoenix in the trade. But with all of them, it just seems that no Penny and makes no sense to give you another one.
Right.
Well, now LA has certainly deserved the numbers being number two in the West, though. You know, and I don't want to spend too much time without talking about the strengths that this team brings. Notably, I'm really going to enjoy, and I always do, the inside matchups, the up-front matchups of Griner and Dupree and Parker and Ogwumike. And Parker will match up most likely on Dupree in this, with Ogwumike playing against Griner, as they've done in prior games. And, you know, that's a matchup that actually works in a lot of ways in L.A.'s favor, Cindy.
Oh, most definitely, because Griner is still learning how to handle the physicality of this WNBA. I think it's taken her aback and how her development has been hindered a little bit, not just with the injuries, but just about how night in and night out, it doesn't matter what the opposition is, whether it's the Silver Stars, the Storm, the Dream, the Sky, somebody in multiple ways is going to bang on her, and she is still getting used to that. She's even wearing a flak jacket now to handle all of the elbows and the bumps and the bruises, because it's just that tough and nothing like she was ever exposed to on a consistent basis in the Big 12. I think definitely LA has the advantage in those particular matchups because Parker will bring Dupree away from the basket and her comfort zone and make her defend outside. And Agumake will also bring Griner away from the basket because Nneka, from 15 feet in, is a marvel with the basketball. She's good off the dribble. She can move. She's so athletic. That's going to create a problem. The thing that I think is an advantage for the Mercury is that Parker brings to this series the weight of, I'm the next best without a title. Remember, for the Fever last year, Tamika Catchings finally got her ring. So now Candace Parker has that mantle of being the next best player in the league without a WNBA title. And that may weigh on her and could be an advantage for the Mercury.
Yeah, the other side of that matchup, now we talked about up front, but down the backcourt is where Phoenix really has, in my opinion, a strong advantage because if size and strength more than anything else. Lindsey Harding was a tremendous addition, and L.A. wouldn't be as strong a team as they are. And Kristi Toliver, when she's on, is lights out. We know about her other issues if she's not on. But a couple of numbers. And Diana played three games, really, sat out most of this last one against L.A. and
right.
scored 34, 23, and 32 in the games against L.A. And that's not even to me. The other one is the one that's the killer to me is Dawana Bonner put up 23, 17, and 17 against the backcourt in addition to that. So you're looking at over 40 points a game, close to 50 from the Phoenix guards against L.A.
It all depends on where the Phoenix defense begins in the half court against the Sparks. If it begins as soon as the ball is brought over half court, I like the Mercury's chances because then that size really becomes a problem for Harding and Toliver to see over Grossi and Bonner to make the pass to get the offense going. If the guard play up front is not that tenacious defensively, then Toliver and Harding use their speed and quickness and drive around the size, and then the problem starts.
You know, the other thing that's going to have to happen, though, and Mel, Taurasi and Parker in particular have got to keep their cool. The amount of technicals, you know, that these guys have racked up this year are putting a good amount of money in the league funds.
That's right. Certainly, you know what I've been joking about, some of these fines. Speaking of, I guess you're aware of that little hefty one early in the year that Phoenix got assessed. You know, for after the first Phoenix game, after the first Minnesota game, out there on the road, and you know, it took them a while to come out. And at that point, I told the league that if any of that got those fines or out of the media situation, that should go into the budget for hospitality at the WNBA. We help raise that money by being around.
Yeah, if anybody doesn't know what Mel's talking about, early on, Corey Gaines, as head coach, basically didn't let the team come out and speak to the media, which is against the league rules. And there was a hefty fine assessed to the Mercury franchise for that.
A five-digit fine. Not some of the throwaway four-digit fines. It was a five-digit fine.
Well, they were trying to cover Cindy's travel expenses for the year.
Yeah, that's it.
You know, I said, I joked with New York. I joked with Lambert one time since he was doing just harassing me all year. And we were talking about that, and I said, you'll never get fined that much. And why? I said, well, it's prorated, so people aren't really waiting around for you guys this year.
All right, so let's bring this home. Let's bring this home. Mel, who's going to win this series and how many?
You know what? Remember how high we were on Phoenix. It's a different Phoenix team than the team we were high on, but I think they might get an upset. I mean, teams have won in L.A. this year, you know, on a given night. And so I'll make this my upset special and give Phoenix a 3-2 edge. But it'll be a wire-to-wire series.
Well, if it's a 3-2 game edge, then we're going to be watching a whole
lot
of
2-1. Yeah, sorry.
I do wish could be a 3-2 edge. I have to admit, Cindy.
Wow, I asked Diana, how many games she thought this series would go. And she said, too, that the Mercury will sweep. I would love for that to happen. I don't think it will happen. These two teams are so evenly matched. Not only are they 2-3 in the West, they're 2-3 in the league in scoring per game. So for me, it's all going to come down to what Russ Pennell has been selling and if his team buys in these critical matchups. He says he is relishing the fact that, unlike the rest of his coaching experience, it's not one and done, that he'll actually get an opportunity, win or lose, to make adjustments for game two. So that's an interesting element that he brings to the table. For me, it's turnovers. If Phoenix limits the turnovers, and I mean below 20, more like 15 a game, their renewed love of playing defense and rebounding should be enough to scare L.A. enough and get them out of their comfort zone that the Sparks start to panic and make mistakes and open the door for the Mercury to advance. I like the Mercury to win this series in three games.
Very interesting. You know, one thing to consider, 15-2 was the record for the L.A. Sparks at home, but one of those two was to the Phoenix Mercury.
Yes.
So that they definitely have that feeling that they can win there.
Well, and the number for me is since Russ Pennell has came on board, and that's 9-4. He has those guys believing in what his philosophy is, and that's rebounding, limiting the opposition's field goal shooting percentage to below 40%, and not turning the basketball over. And if his team just listens to what he preaches, they are going to be on the right side of the scoreboard.
Sounds good.
Yeah, too, is me. Well, I noticed with Russ, too, is, you know, I mean, Corey was a great guy, but you can just see that Russ kind of breeds a certain, you know, not as crazy as Gio, but, you know, as he gets in the media, but, you know, the in terms of showmanship, but a little personality, you know, like maybe you said it's a little loosey-goosey, you know, a little more kind of out there, per se, that maybe just takes some of the pressure off that may have been on this team with the preseason expectations and everything before that.
It's very true. I mean, there's no question that that has a factor. I'm going to take the Sparks. I don't know why, but I just have this feel. I just have this feeling that this is going to be that we're destined for a Minnesota LA conference final. So I'm going to have to go with the Sparks just because I want to see that, if nothing else.
I like that you're the wild card there, Dave. And here's the deal: after last year and my horribly wrong pick of picking Minnesota to repeat, clearly I'm not the best when it comes to predicting, A. B, I think it speaks to how much the women's game has changed. There is not a single thing that you can etch in stone anymore, unlike you could as few as 10 years ago. The level of the athleticism and the ability of these World Cup class athletes to play at the highest level means on any given day, anybody can beat anybody, and it just makes the game that much more exciting.
Well, I won't bring up my pick of the Connecticut Sun to make the playoffs and the Atlanta Dream to miss the playoffs this year. So.
Yeah, but, you know, the injuries, you really got to take all those injuries serious. They played with – they only have two hands, and they played with three hands behind their – tied behind their back all season, you know. So,
this is true.
You know?
Well, Cindy, Mel, I want to thank you both for taking some time to be with us this evening and to share your thoughts. And, you know, let's look forward to some great WNBA playoff action. It's the best time of the year other than the NCAA tournament, in my book. I love the postseason.
Right on. Christmas in September.